Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
A mid-morning dance with the devil from the Farmer of Fury.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We're coming to you live from College Green right here in Westminster at the very heart of democracy, or what used to be known as the heart of democracy, before John Bercow decided to take it his own way and change it into the heart of John Bercow's democracy. There's an awful lot of MPs who are not happy with him. There's an awful lot of MPs who are not happy with Theresa May. There's an awful lot of people who are very happy with Theresa May, and many of them are on the Labour Party side. We don't know what's happening next Tuesday, but we're told there will be a meaningful vote. What I'm telling you is the most meaningful thing that's going to happen the next 3 hours is you listening to me and a bunch of guests from down here in Westminster at the very heart of the corridors of power, where everything is going on, where plots are afoot, where plans are being made, where dust-ups are being planned for next Tuesday. We're going to find out with the help of a series of guests, including Ross Kempson, our political editor, who's here with us, and of course a lot of MPs as well. We're going to be finding out and asking them the questions you want to ask them. So if you've got a question for any MP, anyone that you want to know the answer for any question of, you tell me now. 0344 499 1000 is the number. And of course, we'll be doing the Perrier Awards a little bit later on because it's Friday. We'll be dealing with a few protesters if they come in here and try and heckle us. We'll give them short shrift. We don't take any bullying from anybody, whether they be right-wing, left-wing, centrist, fascist. We don't care. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Well, I'm joined already very, very early on in the show by two very distinguished people. I've got Ross Kempson on my right here, who is our political editor. He's going to be with us throughout the course of the morning. And Nigel Evans, the Conservative MP for Ribble Valley. Nigel, a very good morning. Looking very sort of weekendy, if I may say so.
Very country.
Ready for the Shires.
Next stop, Ribble Valley.
Excellent plan. Now, tell us, first of all, what's going on, because unusually, there's a bit of action going on inside the Parliament today on a Friday. Usually on a Friday, everybody goes back to their constituencies, but there's still a bit of speech-making to be done. There's still a bit of persuading going on. What's happening over there?
Yeah, you're quite right. On a Friday, normally, if there's no private members' bills, and they normally attract about 15 people on a Friday, because it's not just simply it's a one-liner. You're not compelled to be here. But we got a notification just before Christmas that we would be needed on this Friday. And so I know there's 35 members of Parliament down to speak today, at least,
right,
in the continuation of the Brexit debate. This is the second instalment of the Brexit, as you remember.
Well,
the first one got pulled just before Christmas.
Did. I mean, a lot of people wonder what it is that there is that's left to debate, really, because, of course, Theresa May keeps just sort of saying the same thing. This is the best deal in town. This is the only deal in town. We're not going to get anything else out of Brussels. We're not really going to change any of the suggestions that we had the last time around. So what exactly are they asking for, these
MPs?
Well,
it's a fascinating question that you ask, because the reason why the vote was pulled just before Christmas is that the whips had done their calculations. They worked out that it was going to go down big time. It wasn't going to get through. So they decided to pull it in order that Theresa could then go back to Brussels and come back with, as we were told, more than warm words.
Yes.
Well, she came back and she didn't even get the warm words.
No.
They basically said, get stuffed. We're not altering anything. And we're talking about, in the main, this backstop thing, whereby the problem is between Northern Ireland and Ireland. That is going to be the border of the United Kingdom with the European Union. They don't want a hard border there, so therefore they need to look for a solution that would mean that it obviates the need for the hard border. And so we've got this 20-month implementation period post-March the 29th when we officially leave the European Union. I would have thought that's plenty of time, quite frankly, to establish what the solution is going to be. We've been talking about it for 2 years.
Yes.
We've got another 20 months
and
then
the
to
argument
talk about
mostly
it.
Seems to be about whether or not the border can either be done away with or implemented with or without the permission of the European Union. I mean, that's what the row seems to be about.
Well, there's two things here, really. One is what is the fact that they insisted that we couldn't talk about trade with the European Union until the withdrawal agreement had been implemented.
Right.
They then used that opportunity to hit us over the head time and time again with this backstop issue. And in fact, we are told the backstop is something that they hope, the Downing Street and the European Union hope, will not be necessary.
Right.
And indeed, if it is necessary, it's going to be temporary.
Mm.
So now we've gone back to them and said, well, how temporary? They said, we're not telling you.
Right.
I mean, it is absolutely bonkers. And we know that had we talked collaterally, at the same time rather, about the trade agreement with the European Union. Let's say, no, we've got a £95 billion deficit with
yes.
them. They sell us £341 billion worth of goods every year.
Yes.
And let's say we want to carry on buying their cars and
let's
their
say they
champagne.
Want to continue selling them to
if they can get them through Calais, of course.
Yes.
According
to the guy in Calais, that'll be no problem.
I know that, but that's skirted over by them.
Oh, yes.
I mean, the whole thing is absolutely ridiculous. And so we are really talking about when we've restarted this debate, and nothing has changed other than Theresa has gone back to them.
Mm.
She wanted to take back more than warm words, didn't get the warm words. May have got a glass of wine out of
President Juncker. Well, at least Juncker didn't ruffle her hair like he likes to do to somebody.
No, that's right.
So she got away with that.
She escaped lightly. But the fact is that the fundamentals haven't changed since Christmas. And so what's my expectation is we'll have another 2 days of debate on Monday and Tuesday. And unless there can be the legal clarity that the DUP need and we need as well on the Conservative side, then it's going to go down big time. And we have to remember that without the Democratic Unionist Party, the Conservative government cannot govern. I mean, it is absolutely insane that this agreement has been done in the way that it was done.
Mm.
And it looks to me as if the DUP were overlooked. They weren't properly consulted. I would have had Arlene Foster sitting next to me saying, how does this sound?
But then would Theresa May not have been accused of cozying up to the DUP, which she doesn't want to be seen to be doing? She seems to me to be a woman who wants to appear to be in charge, even though everybody kind of is watching her falling apart and not in charge of anything.
Well, she was in charge of the last general election, and that's why we are where we are.
Indeed.
The responsibility for the manifesto that made us have a minority government and to rely on the DUP, it stays firmly at the steps at number 10. And so we are where we are, and the Prime Minister has to cozy up to the DUP. That is the bleeding
reality
of the situation.
Indeed.
So whether, you know, whatever the pretenses are, the fact is we need them. And so post-Tuesday, when it goes down, as it will,
yes.
inevitably, I think
you
it's
think
16,
there's no doubt about that.
16-1, isn't it? They say, uh-huh. you know, you can get one, put one
the
pound on, you'll get 16
often
back.
Often get it wrong, although they do sometimes get it wrong. Let me bring Ross Kempsall in here, because yesterday we saw Jeremy Corbyn introducing for the first time, kind of officially, how about we just kick this away for a while and get the 3-month extension for the Article 50 break-off. Ross, how's that been kind of received overnight?
Well, with some speculation, some incredulity, I would say, Mike, really, to be perfectly frank with you, because at this stage it's not clear, I don't think, that Labour really could renegotiate this deal within a 3-month time frame. I think the reality of what we really saw as the top line from Jeremy Corbyn yesterday was a slight softening on extending Article 50,
yeah.
When he did make an assumption, really, about Keir Starmer's comments or an admission saying that it was possible, really, that Keir Starmer had indicated that that might be a possibility. Now, that's the first time the Labour leader has softened in that way. I think on the meaningful vote next Tuesday, which everyone here in Westminster is now focused on, speaking to senior government sources last night, it's very clear that the point is no longer even not if we're going to lose but by how much, but it's now how catastrophic will the loss be. So I've been looking at numbers, looking at 200 you could still have, and there were a handful of Tory MPs who peeled off yesterday. Some senior Tory MPs, people like George Freeman, Edward Lee, Trudy Harrison, coming back into the fold for the deal, but those are not the kind of numbers that Theresa May needs to be bringing in right now. She needs to be increasing that by a factor of 100. So there's no way, really, I think at this stage, that we're looking at anything other than a particularly crushing right now for the government on Tuesday.
Well, Nigel, would there not then be a case to be made in Theresa May's office as we speak this morning? How about we just put it off again? Because presumably they can do that, can't they, if they wish?
They could, yes, and it would result in Theresa upsetting the Speaker again, which in itself is an end probably worth doing. But I think it would be far better, as Ross says, it's over 100 Tories or thereabouts. But the important thing for Theresa May is the DUP. And whilst the DUP don't like it, it's not going to get through. So I think the defeat, and it's how bloody is the defeat, means that Theresa, I expect on Tuesday night, will make a statement and tell us what the plan B is, which she's failing to tell us so far. Apparently, you know, there's no plan B. The focus is to get this.
To be honest, plan A is not looking that great, is it, really?
Well, you could almost dispense with it. But the important thing about being defeated is that I expect Theresa then to say, I will now go back to Brussels and say, you know, it's either no deal or you have to concede the fact that we need to unilaterally leave the European Union. And that's the big thing about this. At the moment, we can unilaterally leave the European Union. Once that treaty is signed and agreed, we can't, because the backstop could be instituted, and then from then on in, it takes the European Union to allow us to leave.
Yes.
So we're in a much, much stronger position as we currently are. And it's about time we started to use the leverage of leaving without a deal. We saw Rocco Forte write in The Sun just this week to say, you know, that how good it would be that we could save our £39 billion hostage money and spend it on British public services at the same time as then do trade deals with the rest of the world. You've also got to take on board as well that Donald Trump said that this deal seemed to be a very good deal for the European Union. And his ambassador, Woody Johnson, seemed to correct him slightly, but then post-Christmas has come out himself now and said he's not so sure what sort of trade deal could be done with the United States of America. That's got to be the jewel in the crown. And if the ambassador says that it might stop us doing a trade deal, if the president says it might stop us doing a trade deal, it's pointless, number 10, or indeed Liam Fox saying, we can do a trade deal. Well, no, we can't. It takes two to tango.
No, indeed. And, I mean, you'd like to think, would you not, that this is all a bit of posturing and at the end of the game, somebody will produce the joker and say, look, this has all been negotiations, this has all been, you know, posturing, this has all been a bit of a dance of death, but now here's what we're actually going to do. But my fear is that nobody's actually got the joker.
Well, it may well be that case. And it leads back to what Ross was saying earlier on about Jeremy Corbyn and giving this hint that we could extend the misery by another 3 months. For what? So that I could listen to Anna Soubry and Dominic Grieve and Sarah Wollaston on my own side coalesce with the Remainers on the Labour benches and the Scott Knapp benches. No, that's not going to be any achievement whatsoever. We're told that business wants stability. Everybody expects us to leave on March the 29th. It's almost like trying to alter the date of Christmas.
Yes.
It would be catastrophic in itself and would lead to people thinking that we just simply have lost control. And so going down the route of extending Article 50, I think, would be an absolute disaster and would achieve absolutely nothing. So say we've had 2 years of all of this so far. And we've made the pass to the European Union on a number of things. We've given them the upper hand.
Yeah.
We've made lots of concessions. And we've got this £39 billion worth of hostage money that we're giving them over that 20-month period, which they need. And then they want to carry on selling us goods. Let's use that leverage. Yeah. And we're just simply failing to do so.
Sure. And what's the atmosphere like inside the Houses of Parliament at the moment? Because there seems to be a kind of a disconnect between what parliamentarians are saying and what the people outside of Parliament are saying. I'm not talking about the crazy people out here shouting and groaning on about whatever it is they're groaning on about. But, you know, people are asking for them to get on with the job, to do the people's will, which is, in fact, to leave the European Union. And yet there's more and more voices inside the Houses of Parliament, it seems, saying, well, nobody here wants to do that, so therefore we're going to do what we want to do.
Yeah, well, I'm a bit of a saddo. So this morning at about 6 in the morning, I looked at the EU referendum result programme.
Yes.
Just to remind myself as to exactly what went on in 2016. It was a hard-fought campaign, and everybody and the elites expected Remain to win, and indeed there were two opinion polls out that day that gave Remain a lead of between 4 and 8%. Then the results came in, with its Sunderland and Newcastle and Swansea and all of those, and it was quite clear that Remain had lost, that the people didn't buy into Project Fear, and that they wanted to see an independent country outside of the European Union. Ever since that day, we've had a Remain parliament, because that's what it is. Three-quarters of the MPs in that parliament, over my shoulder, voted Remain. And they have used every tool in the book, including having the Speaker overturn centuries of tradition by allowing an amendment which should never have been allowed to a motion on the business on Wednesday this week. Absolute disgrace. And yet they are doing everything they can to possibly flout the wishes of the British people. We've had a general election in between that referendum and today, which said that the Labour Party and the Conservatives said we would respect the results of the British people. I even listened to people like Justine Greening on the EU referendum programme saying we need to respect the result. Even Anna Soubry said it, but they've all changed their tune now. And some of them hide behind this so-called second referendum or people's vote, and that's nothing other than another bite at the cherry.
Which there's no guarantee they would win, by the way.
No, there's no guarantee that they would win, but it would diminish democracy in this country if we were to cave into the demands of the Remainers. There's not a single lever asking for a second people's vote. They want people... They want the government to just get on and deliver what the people had voted for. And another thing that strikes me as amusing is that we're all told that the Leavers didn't know what they were voting for. Right? They're a bit thick, they're racist, and they didn't know what they were voting for. But this week, increasingly, you hear the Remainers telling us that but what they didn't vote for was leaving without a deal. It's tremendous.
It's talking about the shifting sands. There's too many lawyers over there. I think that's the major problem. But Nigel, listen, we've got to cut it short here because we've covered a lot of ground. Ross Campbell's going to be here for the rest of the show. Enjoy Ribble Valley. Thank you very much for popping down.
I can't wait to get back to the Shires, as you say.
Well, listen, we'll be back here on Monday, so don't pop by while we prepare for Armageddon on Tuesday, the so-called meaningful vote. It might be a lot more meaningless than we think. Nigel, thanks very much
indeed. Thanks very much,
This is Talk Radio. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We're live in College Green, where Westminster is abuzz with rumours, abuzz with all manner of stories and predictions. Ross Campbell is here with me. He's our political editor, of course. He's going to be here throughout the show. We're here till 1 o'clock. We want to hear from you as well, of course, because you are the people that need to ask the questions of the politicians, all of whom are coming on this show today. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call us on. We're going to go to the calls right now and speak to Diane, who's from Wakefield. Diane, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Very good morning to you as well. Yes, the question I want to ask is, we never heard anything from the Remainers regarding what's written in the Lisbon Treaty and how it will affect if we do not leave the EU.
What makes you think we're not going to leave the EU, though, Diane?
Oh, don't you worry. I 1,001% want to leave the EU. But it's just concerning me but that no Remainers ever bring this up, and it's a big argument against not having a people's vote.
No, well, do you know what's interesting? Yeah, well, what I find extraordinary, Diane, is that we have never, ever heard anyone before, I would say, the last year, talking about how brilliant the European Union was, how great the Lisbon Treaty how fantastic we have been treated by our friends over in Brussels. Because, one, it's not true. Two, nobody has ever said that because it's not the way anybody feels. Suddenly now we're being told that the European Union is such a marvellous entity, such a fantastic endeavour,
exactly,
that we shouldn't possibly be allowed to leave it.
Exactly. And it's so... I
find it extraordinary.
I never, ever used to be in... I never used to get involved in politics until recently, and I have researched and researched and researched, and I am 1,000,000,000% sure that this country's way forward is to come out of the EU on WTO terms. But on the other side, the Remain and all the mainstream media are talking about how we shouldn't, it's going to affect this country, but they never speak about what's written in the Lisbon Treaty. If, God forbid, we have to stay in, it means, I think it's in 2022, that we have to accept more rules, more federalisation. And I just wanted to understand whether that was correct or not, what's written in the Lisbon Treaty, because I've been trying to research it as well. And it's sort of an argument that people from the...
Well, Diane, you know what? Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Diane. I'm going to ask Ross Kempsall for the answer to that question, because he's our political editor. He knows all about these things, and he's going to find out what the Lisbon Treaty scenario is. But we'll also put your question to any other MPs that we speak to on the show this morning. Do you know who your MP is, Diane? And if so, do you want us to try and get hold of him?
No, not really, no, because I've got a letter, unfortunately... Wakefield, where I'm from, it's a Labour MP, and it's John Trickett.
Yeah.
And they're all at first they were for I'll leave, they sat and they're not now. They've turned the route, and also in the next borough it's Yvette Cooper, which is obviously she's not very well liked at the moment in this area.
No. No, she's one of those who stood up in Parliament this week, in fact, and decided that it would be a great idea to try and make it impossible for Britain to leave the European Union without a deal. But it was a waste of everybody's time and money, because, quite frankly, even though she won the vote, it makes no difference whatsoever to what the government will do between now and March the 29th. But, Diane, listen, thank you very much indeed for making the call. We will endeavour to find out the answer for your question before the end of this show, so do keep listening. We're here, of course, at Talk Radio until 1 o'clock. We want to hear from more of you as well, 0344 499 1000. If you've got a question that you've been wondering about that you haven't been able to get an answer from any politician or from any political pundit, this is the place to get it.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio. You got me begging.
Oh, 0344 499 1000 is the number to call us on. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We're down on College Green. We're live in Westminster, where Parliament is still sitting, unusually for a Friday, because more than 20 different MPs are all going to have their say on the Brexit withdrawal debate. They have decided that they are still arguing about something which everybody else, I think, in the country has pretty much decided upon as far as what it is that the future holds. There is a meaningful vote coming up on Tuesday, of course. Theresa May may well not survive that particular vote. Ross Kempsall is here with us. We'll be asking him once more what is going on over there across the road behind us from our tented position here on the green down in Westminster. It's a little bit warmer than we thought it was going to be, but the temperature certainly is getting much chillier over there on the Conservative benches. But the other big news today, which many more people do care about, of course, is that Andy Murray has revealed that he plans to retire from tennis, probably after Wimbledon this year, if indeed he's well enough to play in Wimbledon. He had a very tearful farewell, giving a press conference and crying over the fact that he's in so much pain that he may not even really be able to get through the Australian Open. We're going to be joined now by Rupert Bell, a TalkSport's tennis correspondent, to tell us precisely why people are so affected by this. Rupert, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning, Mike.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us. I mean, Andy Murray's been dealt a sort of a bit of an unfair hand in many ways here, hasn't he? Because he's had terrible time with his back and his hips and his legs, and he's had operation after operation, and he's been in a lot of pain for quite a long time.
He has indeed, and I don't think it's entirely unexpected. But you just realise how much the sport and of tennis means to him, that the tearful press conference, because what he's not been able to do is retire on his own terms. His body has given up on him. But what he has done, though, the reason that has happened is because he gave so much to his sport in terms of his determination to win, and to win every point, every game when he was at the height of his powers, to enable him to get to world number one, two Wimbledon titles, two a US Open title, two gold medals in successive Olympics, single-handedly almost winning the Davis Cup for Great Britain. So much was just about sheer grit and determination coupled with talent. Eventually, the body just said, I've had enough. I can't do this anymore. And unfortunately, those heroics that got him to world number one in 2016 ultimately looks like it's cost him a long career. But it was a career that achieved so much.
It was, and he's a very misunderstood guy, isn't he? Because you'll have met him a few times, Rupert, I'm sure. He's a much funnier man in person than people give him credit for. He's a much more kind of subtle, entertaining character than his doer sort of, you know, outer image suggests.
Absolutely, and without and an extremely popular character. You just have to look not only at some of the articles written Wilson News has come out, but more importantly from his fellow players. The affection with which he's held, not only for his sort of self-deprecating humour that he employs, but also for the role that he takes within the sport with regards to equality and issues. He's not frightened of putting his head above the parapet in terms of what he says. And it, unfortunately, he got misconstrued a couple of statements about World Cup football and things that sort of have left a sour taste in many people. But forget that. That's not really him. Just let's appreciate what he did on the court, which was extraordinary. And in an era when there were so many good players and are, with Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, it's a golden era which he was able to compete at and compete at very effectively. And off the court as well, as I say, a hugely popular character.
And you can see that it's a massive golden age, as you say, of tennis, because so few people have been able to crack into that top four behind those names that you've just given me. And in fact, you might argue that he's quite young, actually, Andy Murray, to be bowing out, because we've seen, I mean, Djokovic not quite as good and perhaps as long-lasting as we thought he might be, but certainly Roger Federer still playing at a much older age.
Yeah, he's 37, and I think this is part of the frustration. Bjorn Borg retired when he was 26 because he couldn't believe that he lost to John McEnroe in a Wimbledon final and suddenly felt he couldn't compete and he was lost far too young. But the way the sport has evolved, yes, players are going on much older and achieving greater because of the way they manage their fitness and schedule. But also, as you say, that the young generation haven't been able to prize open that elite level, which has been so dominated by these four players of which Murray has been part of it. They have completely dominated tennis over the last 10 years. And we will miss Murray as a result. Federer and Djokovic is world number one at the moment, so still competitive. Nadal's got injury problems at 32. So the guard is changing, but it's a slow process. And sadly, it looks as if Andy Murray will finally bow out. Hopefully he can find a way of getting to Wimbledon. But I'd rather he didn't turn up there just to be a sort of first or second round whipping boy, because that wouldn't be the way to be remembered. If he's going to go, see what happens this week. He's up against a difficult first round opponent. Don't try and drag it out just for the sake of one last sort of appearance at Wimbledon. Let's remember him for his two Wimbledon wins, which will certainly define him as one of Britain's greatest tennis player, but one of Britain's greatest sportsmen.
Absolutely, Rupert. Thank you very much indeed. Rupert Bell, TalkSport's tennis correspondent, giving us his appreciation of Andy Murray. A great player, a fantastic personality, and a great loss he will be to the world of sport, of course. We're down here in Westminster. Ross Kempsel is here with me. Ross, I've got an interesting tweet here just to ask you a question on from Nick, who says, if Theresa May loses a vote of confidence and we have a general election, who has the authority to delay Article 50 in the intervening period? That is an interesting one, if we technically don't have a government or a parliament.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, the situation in a general election would be that obviously Theresa May would continue in office in that election campaign.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a situation where you would, I think, get an extension or any change to Article 50, because you would have to have, it looks like, a majority in the House of Commons to get that through. And that's one of the problems at the moment, is that there's no clear majority. So I don't think situation, you would see any clear change on that, but the parties would have to make that clear in their manifestos.
Right.
So in that election, they would have to be clear about what they were going to do in Article 50, and then it would go to the general election.
And this is part of the problem at the moment, isn't it? But we're not really seeing clarity from either side, really. I mean, we've of course got the Theresa May withdrawal deal on the table, but even that is kind of up in the air, because we heard the other day that she might give some concessions to Labour about the employment laws and that kind of thing, protection for employees under EU law, and maintaining a few other bits and pieces to try and give succour and comfort to the unions. But we've got the Labour Party, on the other hand, also refusing to be specific on exactly what deal they would negotiate. They just keep saying, oh, well, we'd negotiate a better deal. But how, though?
Yeah, and Jeremy Corbyn says that he wants a general election, but that would put him politically in the position where he would have to, in his general election manifesto, make very clear what his policy would be, both on Theresa May's deal, on the details of that, and on the future relationship and the future negotiations. Now, he says he would like there to be a single market kind of relationship. He says that he would like there to be a new customs union. But I think in a general election situation, you would have to make that a lot clearer, and the manifesto would have to be quite detailed.
OK, let's return to the question that we got from Diane in the first hour of the show, who was keen to find out precisely what role the Lisbon Treaty would have if, in fact, we decided not to stay in the European Union, which I don't think either of us really think is a likelihood that's going to happen. But in the event that we did stay in the European Union, her question was, how does the Lisbon Treaty kind of take account of that, I suppose?
Well, none of the UK's relations with the EU in legal terms have actually yet changed in a significant way, because we're waiting for all of that to be enacted through the transition period and then on to leaving. Now,
right.
The situation, I don't think, again, that there would be any change. And it is possible that the UK could rejoin. I think at this stage, the EU would still make some kind of special arrangements to, in some way, get around the problem of Article 50 not being irrevocable. Now, we know that that has been up against this ruling in the top courts in Europe, saying that the UK does have this unilateral option to leave. But it's quite clear that the EU would allow the UK back in, I think, at this stage, tentatively.
Oh, I think with open arms, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but that becomes much less clear when we get further down the road, and you would then have to, the European Union has said this, if you wanted to re-accede to the European Union, you would need to go through the normal process of accession. Now, whether that would in reality be put into place is another question, but at least in theory, after we leave in March, if the UK wants to rejoin, and I presume that this would be after the end of the transition period, you would need to go through the normal process of reapplying to join.
Okay, now while the negotiations and the speeches go on over in the Houses of Parliament behind us here on College Green, Downing Street's busy as well, presumably today, trying to put finishing touches onto some form of communique or other. What are we going to see from them today?
Well, we've just had this new line in the last few moments, which is an interesting line at the cabinet level. Theresa May has slightly slapped down Jeremy Hunt, who was out and about this morning, basically making some softer noises towards extending Article 50. And Theresa May has restated this policy that she is very firmly against extending or changing the Article 50 process or date. Now, whenever we talk about changing the Article 50 date, it's not quite as straightforward as that. It's not clear how and the kind of mandate that would be needed from the House of Commons for that to actually be done. So it's generally thought that if you wanted to change the leave date, you would have to bring that to the Commons, and you would have to change legislation because it's now in an act of Parliament. So you would probably have to have a vote in the House of Commons is what it would really come down to, and Theresa May making it very clear that she doesn't want to go down that path. Now, I wouldn't say that that's a hard and fast reassurance, because to be honest, if we get to March and Theresa May is in a deal or no deal situation at that stage, you'd be looking at it being extremely late in the day, but I think at that point you can't rule anything out.
And it might actually be a vote that she would win, because there are plenty of people in the what we can now call the Remain Parliament who would be happy to postpone it rather than go out with no deal.
True, but I think it would be difficult for Theresa May then to make the argument that she's the right person to continue the negotiations if Article 50 were to be extended. She would have a tough call on that, because she's been so consistently clear all the way through that she believes that the UK is leaving in March. Although it was quite interesting, an answer she gave the other day, where she usually gives that line, she didn't quite say that. So there has been some slight change in messaging there. But that is more to do, I think, with us getting up towards the date than anything else.
No, indeed. Ross Kempsall here with us, political editor of Talk Radio. She's so lovely, 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 she's so lovely. Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We are live on College Green. It's a bit chilly. It's a very, very grey and dank old day down here in Westminster. Back over at the road in the Parliament building, there are people making speeches about Brexit. There are people making plots about Brexit. But what we don't know is what will happen next Tuesday when it's time for the meaningful vote. Ross Kempsley is here with me. We're going to be joined shortly by Chloe Wesley, who is from the Taxpayers Alliance, of course. We'll find out from her what she thinks should happen when Theresa May gets completely and utterly slaughtered, basically, when the meaningful vote takes place next week. First, though, let's go to the phones, 0344 499 1000. Patrick is in Belfast. Hi, Patrick.
Good morning, mate. I hope you're wrapped up warm.
I'm wrapped up very warm, thank you very much. In fact, my coat is so big that I can barely get into the tent.
Well, I think that says more for the space of the tent than it does for you, Mike.
Thank you very much indeed for letting me down gently. What would you want to tell us?
Mike, I'm really, really getting peeved off with these people like your guest, Stephanie, and these MPs who come on and say, oh, the people who voted no didn't know what they were voting for. I'm sorry, but I'm intelligent enough to know what I voted for. I voted out.
Right.
That's what I want. And sick and tired of these MPs and all these people who come on and all these analysts who turn around and say, oh, no, you weren't given all the facts. I'm sorry, but I looked up the facts. It's not a, you know, a very hard thing to do. I want to leave the EU. Why is these MPs turning around now saying, oh, we now have to fill out a whole, like, mandate of answer yes or no to all these questions before we get the actual referendum? We voted no.
Right.
So why don't you go to
You're in Belfast, Patrick, so what do you make of this this sort of ridiculous conversation backwards and forwards about the border, no border, free border, you know, open border? What difference does that make to you?
Listen, Mike, what it comes down to it is the people here, all they want is just to have the way things are, but us to control ourselves. At the end of the day, the EU is going to lose more, and I'm sick and tired of all these different figures saying they're not. The EU relies on us more than we rely on them. If they're going to start putting in all these different things saying, oh, you have to have this or you have to have that, I don't particularly care because it's not going to happen. It's going to harm more European business than it will ours. All I want to do is stop politicians and all these analysts turning around and saying, oh, but you don't know all the facts. I'm sorry.
Yes.
The majority of people voted out, so do your job and get us out. It's plain and
simple. I think you've made that. You've made that very succinct point, and I think a lot of people would agree with you, Patrick. Thanks very much indeed.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Perrier Awards.
And now it's time to go over to Cornelius, the producer, for the awards.
Thank you very much. A warm welcome to you to the very first Perry Awards of 2019, here live, sort of, in a nice and warm studio. This is where we cast our ears back over the past 5 days of the so-called Independent Republic of Mike Graham and choose our favourite moments. And a new year brings with it a fresh group of gaffes and weird moments, so let's find out who the first winners are. As is tradition, Mike, you're up first. The first Perry Award you've won of the year is for the best backtrack.
I take you down to a Crown Court which is falling apart.
Yeah. Well, I used to spend a great deal of time in the court system, Jerry. Not as a criminal, of course. That's true. I was never a criminal.
Mike, you're not the only one who's been on the right side of the law this week.
Mm.
Congratulations, Susan in Exeter, for winning the Innocence Award.
Unless you're sending drugs or other illegal contraband into a prison, which, excuse me, I don't have anything to do with.
No, thank goodness for that. It's illegal. God bless Susan.
Don't leave the metaphorical stage yet, Susan. You also win the Perrier for best impression for your take on a horse.
No, but I mean, say you wanted, for example, you wanted a panoramic view of the White Cliffs of Dover, right? You could go to the top of the White Cliffs of Dover. You could set... She does make some very odd noises when she's not speaking, I have to say.
I think she hasn't recorded, just on buttons or something, I don't know. Mm. Our next winner is a regular on the show, GP Dr. Lawrence Buckman. He wins the Perrier for most immediate example.
I mean, they're not the same thing at all.
No.
A cold is a runny nose. you cough, you might cough up a little bit of phlegm.
You know, he did that the last time he was on as well.
Yeah,
he's always got something wrong with him, that doctor.
Well, the only people he meets are ill, so
that's true.
That's probably why.
Yeah.
Congratulations to friend of the show, Katie Perrier, for winning the Perrier for this week's sassiest moment.
They don't even know who their MEPs are. They've probably never ever voted for one, and they wouldn't know where to find him if, in fact, they did know who it was.
Or her.
Got you there.
Flying the flag for feminism.
Sky News' chief political correspondent, John Craig, wins the Perrier this week for best name-dropping.
Let's talk to John Craig, police political correspondent for Sky News, who spends an awful lot of time down on College Green and outside the Houses of Parliament. John, a very good morning to you.
Hello, yes, I was there between 2 and 5 with Kay and then between 5 and 7 with Mark Austin.
Yeah. That's part of his job.
Yeah,
you know. Fanboy.
Mike, another one for you. You win the Perrier for best pronunciation.
Quite right.
For your attempt to say the name of MP Jonathan Janogli.
Guto Bebb, Richard Bennion, Nick Bowles, Mr. Kenneth Clark, Mr. Jonathan Jangley.
Jangley.
I must admit, that one it sort of took me slightly by surprise. I wasn't prepared. Never mind, he's still on the list.
Yeah. You again, Mike. Obviously, the intelligent man you are, you win the most interesting statement of the week.
The French can get away with a lot more than we can because they have this kind of Frenchness thing going on, can't they?
Frenchness, it's a thing, is it not?
Wow.
Je ne sais quoi, as they call it.
It does turn out, Mike, that your statement is clearly untrue. It seems that English can also be quite French. Mm. Take a listen to our broadcasting neighbour, Julia Hartley Brewer.
The French author, I'm not going to say his name, no one's ever heard of him, who's been on French television talking about how it is impossible to love a woman who's over 50. The body of a 25-year-old woman is extraordinary, but not the body of a 50-year-old woman.
Mm. That sounds like Spectre Clouseau.
Yeah, I know. That's it.
There's a berm.
That's it for the Perrier Awards this week. Live from the past, there will be more next week. Back to the present day, Mike, at College Green.
The Perrier Awards on Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.